Welcome to the Zootown Podcast. This week we are continuing the teaching series, The Forgotten Gospel, from Pastor Scott Clout at Zootown Church. The Forgotten Gospel is a teaching series focused on creating better understanding of the Old Testament while studying the context of difficult scriptures and the character of God through the lens of Jesus, who is the perfect representation of God and the final authority in all things. This is part two, The Law. Thank you for joining the conversation, and let's get started.
Well, welcome back to The Forgotten Gospel, part two, in which we are going to look at the law today. And last week we looked at sin and what that was all about. And really what we're doing here is we're just kind of going on a journey and looking at these different words and phrases that we hear often in sermons or just in normal conversation within the church. And it's just good that we understand these terms in a deeper meaning and what they originally were intended, so we can really bridge the gap between the Old Testament and then the words of Jesus. And so before I move on, I forgot to mention in episode one that the major influence in this series for me was a book by Jeremy Myers called Nothing But the Blood of Jesus. And I wanted to give him a good shout out here, because I've read tons of books on this subject from N.T. Wright and Dallas Willard and many other historians, but I thought his book really brought all those together. And what I appreciated about it was he brought kind of the psychology behind it as well, where now that we've been able to study human behavior and just societies for thousands of years, it really just opens up what was going on with the Jews and their surrounding neighbors and why these certain practices mattered to them. And so, again, wanted to just give him a quick shout out, Nothing But the Blood of Jesus by Jeremy Myers. And I just thought it was so well done in bringing all this together so we could really easily understand it. It's a great book to just lay all this out that's easy to read, easy to understand. And so really, I'm just kind of walking through some of these things that he brought up, especially kind of the psychology behind human behavior that goes with all this stuff. So again, last week or last episode was on sin. And really what we talked about was two things. Is sin was more than just breaking God's laws. And that's kind of a thing that in the church and in Christians, we always just think that God was just like this rule maker. And then if you break his law, he's super upset. And it kind of just pits him against the character of Jesus a lot. And that's why I struggle with seeing this as just breaking God's laws, because then it always just makes him as judge. And when Jesus shows up, we see that he was much more than just a judge. And in fact, Jesus said that all judgment was turned over to him. And then later on in John 3:17, he says, I came to the world to not judge it. I'm not here to judge anyone, but that the world might be saved through me. And so that's why it's important to see that sin is more than just breaking God's laws. And so how they viewed sin in their culture, and really all the cultures around them, was that sin was a disease that you could catch. It wasn't something that you had per se. It was something that you could catch from an outside influence. And so Jesus showed us that this is something that was more on the inside. And he comes along and says, you know, you got to clean the inside of the cup, not the outside. And I always like to say that Jesus kind of came to give us a deep clean, the deep clean from the inside out. But when you see it, that they believed that sin was like a disease or a bacteria that you could catch, it really opens up the Old Testament, specifically the Torah, and all these different rules and regulations, like all these different things that they were doing. As far as cleansing those utensils and you know, and cleansing the altar and cleansing their skin and their robes and all that stuff, it was really to ward off sin, because they didn't actually think that they had it. They just wanted to make sure that they didn't get it. And that's really what the law was all about as well, which I want to show you today. But we learned that sin, like from its root source, all sin that you see in the planet is based in four things, and it's kind of this progression of things. It doesn't always end at the same place, but it starts in these same places. And it's rivalry, meaning that we are in constant rivalry with each other because there's limited resources, and really we see what other people have, which then force us to want to have that. So it starts with rivalry, and then when it moves past rivalry, it moves into accusation or blame. We start accusing them of things that they're doing, so then we can kind of be on top in the rivalry spectrum. And then it moves to scapegoat. You eventually find so many things wrong with that person or that community of people that then you can like put all the tribe or all the people's sins onto one place, and that was an animal or even in people throughout time. And finally, it moves into sacred violence. The best way to feel good about violence is you think that God is on your side, and you think that God is affirming of the violence that you're doing. And so this is all sin. And we see this start with Cain and Abel. As I mentioned in episode one, that you know, Cain and Abel bring their two sacrifices to God, and Abel's was acceptable to God and Cain's wasn't. And I'm actually going to talk more about that in the week on sacrifice. But basically then Cain got mad at his brother because he was in rivalry with him over God's blessing and also kind of their property and their farm. So he ends up committing the first murder in history, and then he scapegoats God. So he has rivalry with his brother Abel. He then accuses him. And then he, after he murders him, he says, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And what he was saying is, "Where were you, God? This was on you." And so he went through this whole progression of sin, and that's where all sin stems from at the root. And that's the progression that all sin eventually goes down. So well, why does God hate sin? It's not just about breaking his laws. God is a God of relationship. We see that firmly in the garden, relationship with God, relationship with other people, and relationship with nature. Like, he is a relationship God. And so the reason he hates sin is because it breaks relationship. It's not that he hates us per se. He doesn't hate humans. He just hates that sin that constantly is breaking relationship with him and also with other people. And so, as I mentioned, if you look at the Ten Commandments, if you look at them closely, they are all relationship-based. And they all come down to the, you know, murder. That's sacred violence. You got rivalry with not coveting your neighbor's stuff. But if you really look at the spirit behind it, the reason that the Ten Commandments were good was because it maintained a level of relationship. And so all sin breaks relationship with God and with other people, which is why God hates sin. So today we're going to look at the law for two things. Why was it implemented? And how did Jesus fulfill the law? There's a famous saying that in the Gospels that Jesus fulfilled the law. And there's some confusion with that and what that actually means. And a lot of people kind of take that to a place it never was meant to. And so I hope to break that down. So first off, why was the law implemented in the first place? Well, you got to remember that for thousands of years, there was no law, meaning that until the Ten Commandments and the Torah and all that stuff came about, there was no law. So that's what's interesting about when people think that sin is just breaking God's laws. Well, there was no law implemented in that time to even break. And so what we saw during this season, though, is that it really went to chaos. And it doesn't mean that cultures didn't have rules and laws, because I believe that the Holy Spirit was speaking to culture and speaking to humanity that whole time, not just the Jews, but all of humanity. But by the time we get to Abraham, we see that basically humanity was in just pure chaos, that because there was no God intervention, really, that they weren't following the true gods, it went so far down the trail that Abraham's culture was actually sacrificing their own children to their gods. And again, I'll talk about more on sacrifice, but it was just normal to them. It was normal that because they viewed God as this angry deity, and they had to appease him or her or other gods with sacrifices so that their crops would be blessed and their families would do well. And so that's why when you get to this scene, you see that God starts speaking to Abraham that when he finally tells him to sacrifice Isaac, it was like it was no big deal. And I'm sure that Abraham is going through a ton of emotions, but there was really no pushback on it either. And so that's how far humanity had kind of declined in a way from the garden, that with no God intervention, with them not even kind of seeking God's way, that it just leads to pure chaos. And so what we see in the Old Testament really, and what we see with God is God always wanted relationship. We see that in the Garden of Eden. And I'm going to break that down in this episode, but it was really this experiment that God was kind of allowing, because humans have choice as well. Humans have free will, and God and humans are constantly kind of going back and forth, and God is intervening and meeting people right where they at. But when you see these thousands of years without God's intervention, without God's law, it just led to violence, rivalry, accusations, and scapegoating. And so finally God intervenes, and he kind of let it all play out to say, well, how's this going without God's help? He always lets humans kind of go down their way. As Romans 1 says, he kind of turns us over, but he never leaves us. He just turns us over. So what we see for thousands of years is cultures kind of making up their own rules and making up their own laws and making up their own right and wrong. And it just led to absolute chaos and violence. And so what we do see in cultures is that whenever cultures like don't believe in God, or whenever they follow false gods, or whenever they just don't want God's intervention, that culture actually de-evolves, not evolves. And I don't have time to go into this as far as just human history and how that looks. But I do find it interesting that, you know, I love watching a ton of atheist debates, like, you know, atheist versus a creationist or something like that. And I really enjoy watching those and kind of listening to both sides. But it's always fascinating to me, and I think it's a little unfair that these atheists are constantly, you know, bashing Christianity and culture, or bashing the problems that religion has caused. And it absolutely, that just because that Christians have had influence in certain cultures, that doesn't mean they were perfect. But they're bashing a system that has allowed them the freedoms to even have those debates in the first place. You never really see those debates going on in the Middle East and in Iran somewhere, right? I mean, so in America, we have definitely a Christian background to how we started, and it has allowed certain freedoms. Many black eyes for sure, but the atheists always seem to miss that when you completely take God out and you completely neglect, you know, kind of the right and wrong morality, that it always actually de-evolves people. And we've seen that since the beginning of time. So why do we need laws in the first place? Let's just kind of break this down from a simple form. Why are there laws? Well, obviously, as I told you, it would just have complete chaos if there wasn't any laws. But the main reasons is because people lack common sense, common decency, and common good. I know we're all made in the image of God, and we have kind of forgotten what that looks like, and Jesus came to remind us that. But the reason we need laws is because people are messed up. Like, I'm messed up, you're messed up. We need some sort of barrier to keep society moving forward. So that's why laws are implemented in the first place in every culture, because people lack common sense, common decency, and common good. So let me just show you a couple weird ones, and I want to make a point with this, that it doesn't mean that these laws last forever, and it doesn't mean that these Old Testament laws were meant forever. And so just here's a couple of weird laws that we have had in America that still stand. In South Dakota, it is illegal to fall asleep in a cheese factory. In Alabama, it is illegal to wrestle a bear. In California, it's illegal for animals to mate 1,500 feet of a school, tavern, or church. In Connecticut, it is illegal for a barber to hum a tune while cutting your hair. In Florida, it's illegal to have sex with a porcupine. In Indiana, you cannot catch a fish with your bare hands. And in Iowa, a minister cannot carry liquor across state lines. And so we laugh at those laws, but those are actual laws that have had to have been implemented into our American system, that even though we think we're so advanced, that we still need these kind of weird laws. Why? Because people lack common sense, common decency, and common good. So let's be honest, what really went down here? Why would you have to create those laws? Well, it seems like in South Dakota at one point, someone fell asleep in a cheese factory while they were on the job, and they died. It seems that in Alabama, they're wrestling bears, and they're not as tough as us Montanians to take them down. In California, it seems like the animals are kinky, and they can't come near a school, tavern, or church. In Connecticut, it seems that some barber was singing one time and cut some guy's throat. In Florida, they're having sex with porcupines. What is wrong with Florida? And in Indiana, it seems that someone was catching fish with their bare hands and something went wrong. And in Iowa, some minister was bootlegging moonshine across state lines. So these laws are important for a season, but why would they even have to be implemented in the first place? And so I want you to take that lens and take it now to the Old Testament, because there are some weird laws. But what I really want you to see is that those Old Testament laws, or any law, they were good for a season, but it doesn't mean that God doesn't advance humanity. It doesn't mean that those laws are like his written down in heaven laws for all eternity and for every culture. That was for their culture, for their specific time, to keep the Jews or the Israelites from going off the rails. I think I see this so clearly that even in the Old Testament, they obviously had slavery. And it is bizarre to me that not once is slavery really condemned in all the Bible. And we have to wrestle with that and grapple with that. The reason why is because the Jews brought tons of cultural baggage into this new relationship with God. And so God intervenes and he's constantly bringing them forward. But we can obviously say that none of you watching this can say that slavery is good. And so what God did is he met them where they're at and he gave them a bunch of rules. So that way, at least it was, you know, like somewhat acceptable. But that was never his plan A. And so here's why I want to show you that we know that Jesus is the final word of God, that we know that we should be listening to Jesus, not these Old Testament things. Because why is it that none of you think that we should have slavery, but it's never condemned in the scriptures? Why? Because he advanced humanity when Christ came. He influenced the whole world. And you watching this have heard that Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. And so even though he didn't absolutely condemn slavery, he did in an overall way. So Jesus's laws, Jesus's rules are the final authority over everything. But these laws were in place for a season, but they were not universal laws. Let me give you an example. So when I was in Africa on a mission trip, this is 15 years ago, something like that. There was this debate that was going on between this other missionary group, and I wasn't there. It was just the head missionary was telling me that what was going on. And basically what happened is that was a Muslim country, and the husbands were allowed to marry many wives. And this one husband had like seven wives, and then he converted to Christianity. And the debate that was going on between the missionaries was, which wife is he going to keep? And which wives is he going to divorce? Because they were adhering to the Old Testament law. They were adhering to the law. And they were saying, okay, and not just the Old Testament law, but the New Testament law, you know, like a man should have one wife. And so what they were doing then was they were trying to honor God by using the law. This missionary ended up telling me that he went in and said he's going to keep all those wives. And people were upset about that because it was going to break the law. But what would have happened is in that culture, if you were pushed away by your husband in Muslim culture, you basically were stained. You basically were like a dog, and it would have ruined their whole life. And so he came in and said, this man is going to keep all his wives, and he's going to love them just like Christ loves his bride. You see how grace, see how the law never, ever equals love. And that is what the whole experiment of the Old Testament law was all about, that you can have every law in the books. And we do in America. We got, you know, all these senators always creating new laws. It really can curb certain things and it can bring a sense of justice, but it never really changes human behavior. So how we should view the law now is we can look to the law for advice. We can look to it for the human story, meaning the Old Testament law, but we cannot let it trump the final word in authority of Jesus Christ, because these were not universal laws. And that's why there's a lot of weird ones that we see and we're kind of like, you know, like we would never do that now. Well, yes, they were from God, but it was for that specific time and for that specific culture. My point of that is I want to show you today that I think Christians have fallen into this law mindset way more than we want to admit. And we start holding people to this Old Testament law because we think we're honoring God and we're not. What honors God is always love and always relationship. So let's pick up the story where Israel has been delivered. You know, God came in and he sent the plagues. And, you know, Moses or Charlton Heston said, "Let my people go." And finally they got to go. And God meets them in the desert. He's already shown him his grace. He's already shown them how much he loves them. He's already shown them that he's going to have relationship with them. But he also knows that he has to meet them somewhere. See, this is what some people miss when they look at these certain laws, is that he was really treating them like children. Because the thing that we know from Jesus, this is one of the main things that Jesus taught us, is that God is a father. He's a father of humanity. And so you got to picture these Israelites, that they lived in total bondage. They didn't know the rules. They'd learned a ton of bad stuff from the Egyptians that they're now carrying over into their culture. And so this is like a father having the dad talk. And so really what a lot of these laws were is just like any father with a young child, like a toddler. Don't touch this. Don't eat that. Get your hand out of the poop. And it seems like it's kind of mean, but it's not. He just had to meet them right where they were at. And so he starts giving them laws, and then these laws led to more laws, and then more laws, and more laws. And again, he was allowing this progression to go on to show them and show us the law can never fix anything. It never gets to the root. So fast forward, and they finally have 613 laws, and nothing is getting better. They're just as bad as all the other pagan nations. They're committing all types of violence in God's name. They've taken on more wives. I mean, all women are treated like dogs in their society in so many different ways. They have all these laws, but it hasn't fixed anything. Let me give you this example of why the law can't ever equal love. So let's say you get married and you just want some peace in your house. And every house has to have some rules. They just do. And they are relationship-based rules. But this goes beyond just, you know, when you have kids, of doing chores and all that stuff. But there does have to be some house rules. But let's say that you base your whole marriage on the law. So your whole relationship with your wife is going to be based on the law. So every week, your wife has to have 7 hugs, 5 kisses, and you have to, you implement the law that you have to at least have sex twice a week. Now, some of you guys are like, "Hey, we like that law." Well, I like that law too, but that's not the point, right? The point is that is what you had to do every single week to maintain relationship. After the first couple weeks, you wouldn't mean that hug. You wouldn't mean that kiss. And then on top of that, if you didn't kiss your wife 5 times a week, then she could hold you in judgment against that law, and it would actually break relationship. So you would sin against relationship, because that's the main sin, is against relationship, by holding to the law. So you can do all those things every week. It will never make you love your wife more. It will never make your wife love you more. And it will make this stagnant law-based relationship to where you will actually begin to start judging each other when you break the law. The law, if followed, always leads to more sin, not less, because there's no relationship in it and it's not equaling love. And God implemented the law to try to keep some order, but he wanted to lead them to love. So again, I want you to see that these laws in the Old Testament and even our laws today, they can curb sin for a little bit, but it never gets to the root. And there is never relationship with it. So Jesus comes along and he says, here's how you fulfill the whole law. All 613 laws. You ready for this? You ready? Love God, love people. So to my church, you hear me say this all the time, and if you're not a part of our church, this is what I say all the time, is we always want to talk about the law, and we always want to talk about all these other things that society is doing, and have we gotten the first two down right? Love God, love people. We like to say it. We like to put it on bumper stickers. We like to put it on our computer screens or whatever it is. But do we adhere to it, or do we start judging our brother or sister according to the law? See, this is what I mean when I say that I personally believe that fundamentalism is extremely harsh, and it actually breaks down the Christian faith. And I don't mean like taking things literal per se, like in the Old Testament, like I believe those things happened. I believe that those events happened. But there's a spirit behind those things. There's a message behind the message. And they always point towards this greater reality. But fundamentalism basically nitpicks this, and they take that and they take that and they try to bring it all together to make this big picture. And we miss that Jesus is the Word of God. He is the final authority on all things. And so fundamentalism, what it does is it pits the law against God's grace. It pits what Moses said against what Jesus said. And Jesus said, I am the final authority in all things. So fundamentalism then, it starts saying like you can pick and choose. I mean, our nation did this. When we were conquering this country, we used Old Testament words to justify us killing the Native Americans. We used Old Testament laws to justify slavery. And so that's what I mean with this fundamentalism when I talk about that is we cannot take these Old Testament things and pick and choose them, because we will put Moses over Jesus. And Jesus is the full representation of God. And we need to see that when we're looking at the law. We need to see the law through the Jesus lens. So what I hope to show you in this episode today is that the law was never God's plan A. It was always relationship. Now, a friend of mine says to me, well, it's always God's plan A. Well, yes, I agree with that in one sense, that it never stops the place that God is taking people. But there's a ton of detours along the way, because there's this human relationship and this human involvement and this human choice that God is constantly rerouting. And so the law was never plan A. Relationship and love was always plan A. See, many people believe that Moses, even being their Messiah figure, which he was always plan A. Well, he was plan A in getting them out of Egypt. But Moses's mediation, where Moses would go on a mountain or Moses would meet with God, and it says he had a friendship with God, and then he would relay this information to the Jews, that was plan B. In Exodus 19:6, God is calling the people, all the people of Israel, to come to the mountain, not just Moses. See, we miss this in some of these fine details. And remember, again, he's given a bunch of rules and a bunch of regulations because he's talking to children who don't know anything about right and wrong. So he calls all the nation, and they think this was millions of people at this point, to the mountain of God. And he says this in Exodus 19:6, and you shall be to me, to everyone, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel. And be ready for the third day, verse 11 then, so he's talking to Moses, verse 11, and be ready for the third day. For on the third day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. All the people. Verse 13, no hand shall touch him, but he shall be stoned or shot. Whether beast or man, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds a long blast, they shall come up to the mountain. So he's talking about, again, he's giving him these rules. He's giving him these regulations, right? Like, look, we're going to take this one step at a time. And so he's kind of frightening them. But the point I want you to see is that he says, you are all priests. Every one of you will have a relationship with me. Every one of you. It was never Moses was better than anyone else. It was never that Moses was going to be the mediator and kind of relay this message. He says, I want all of you to come and be kings and priests before me. But look at their response to this when Moses relays this message. Exodus 20, It says, now when all the people saw the thunder and the flashes of lightning and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, the people were afraid and trembled. And they stood far off and said to Moses, you speak to us and we will listen, but do not let God speak to us lest we die. Moses said to the people, do not fear, for God has come to test you, that the fear of him may be before you, that you may not sin. The people stood far off while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. Again, Jesus showed us that God's a father. And so father is having the dad talk right now. And they brought in so much sin and they brought up so many bad views and so many things with each other. He had to start somewhere. So he does give some pretty strict rules here, but he also says, like, look, how much do I have to show you? I have already shown you my power coming out of Egypt. And the reason they were afraid of God is because they brought that cultural mindset from Egypt that the gods need to be appeased. Unless you do the right thing, then God's going to be mad at you, that God's going to strike you down. And so they literally said, we don't want a relationship with God, because they were afraid. They wanted someone in between them and God. Because sometimes standing in front of God is scary, but it's not scary because of God. It's scary because we stand exposed before the Lord. And so they would rather have Moses go before them, and they chose not to have a relationship with God. They wanted just this information relayed to them. And may I say, thousands of years later, we still do this. We still view God this way in so many ways. We still live in this paralysis. And so many people do this with pastors even, that they come to church or they hear a sermon and they want the pastor to relay this information. And they want the pastor to say these things, because it's not as scary as having a real relationship with God. Because when you have to dig into the scriptures, when you have to be fully transparent in front of God, it can be a scary place, but it's only scary because you don't see that God just wants to heal us and send us into the promised land. So even we, thousands of years later, need to understand this, that God is to have a reverence for him, but Jesus comes along and Paul reiterates it, that you are all kings and priests. You are all pastors before the Lord. Jesus says this over and over and over. And we do have different missions sometimes, but we all stand the same before our God. It says we are co-heirs with Jesus Christ. So again, I want you to see that this whole law system was never plan A. Relationship with God, just hearing from God, was always plan A. So Moses listens, and Moses goes back up on the hill and basically says, they don't want a relationship with you. They sent me. And so God starts giving him, the Ten Commandments, and God starts giving him the rules. And because, again, God is a long-suffering God. He says, fine, if they don't want relationship now, then I'll have you be the mediator. And while Moses is up on the hill, it says that they got impatient. The people got impatient with how long Moses was up there. They thought that God had killed him. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And so they create their own God, this golden calf, because this is a God they can control. And then it says they basically had a huge orgy. So they created this God in their own image, a God that would let them do whatever they wanted. And again, thousands of years later, we're still kind of the same. And Moses comes down the hill and he breaks the Ten Commandments. And there's this super weird scene where they got to eat gold. I mean, just this bizarre scene. But my point is, what I want you to see is the law never worked. They hadn't even received the Ten Commandments yet, and they were already messed up. Moses already broke the tablets, and God never told him to break those tablets. So even Moses was messed up. So the whole point, in my opinion, why God allowed this all to happen was to show us and show them the law never equals relationship. The law never equals love. One of my points with this is I just can't figure out why us Christians then are still trying to uphold a law that never worked in the first place. Why are we still looking to certain passages in the Old Testament that Jesus has already brought to light in the New Covenant, in the New Testament? Why are we still holding people to this sense of judgment? It never works. It will never fix people, ever. I hear Christians say a lot, they always say, like, we need a more biblical world. We need a more biblical worldview. And my response to that is, which parts? Which parts of the Bible do we need implemented? Which parts of the Bible? See, I don't believe that we need a more biblical worldview. And this is what I mean when I say we can look back at it, at the Old Testament, we can learn from it, we can grow from it, we can understand the human story about it, but we do not need a more biblical worldview. We need a more Christ-like worldview. Because Jesus came along to show us the love part. Jesus came along and brought clarification to what those laws actually were. So we need a more Christ-like worldview. We see this scene in Deuteronomy where Moses can see the writings on the wall. He's been hanging out with these people long enough, and he sees that the law isn't working, so then they're adding more laws, and that's not working, and people are still fighting. People are still in rivalry and accusation and blame, and they're scapegoating each other, and there's violence, and there's eye for an eye, and tooth for... There's all this stuff going on. And so Moses just stops, and he says this in Deuteronomy 30, verse 5, "And the Lord your God will bring into you the land that your fathers possessed, that you may possess it. And he will make you more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring so that you will love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul that you may live." You can see that Moses is like, this is just never going to work. This is never going to fix the problem. Yeah, we got circumcision and it makes us feel better than everybody else, you know, the uncircumcised dogs, but our behavior is the same. And so he says right here, but there is coming a time that God is going to circumcise your hearts. And so there's already a glimpse that sin is not this outside thing. And laws are never going to fix the sin problem. That it's always a circumcision of the heart. It's always this inward healing that Christ came to show us. Why are more laws needed in Old Testament, and why are more laws needed now? Again, it's funny where if you go into any, you know, airplane or something and you see the signs and it'll be like, do not tamper, touch, or destroy this sign. And you're like, why would they even have to say that? Well, because some dude tried to destroy that sign for some weird reason at some point. And the reason more laws always have to be added is because we're always looking for a loophole. You ask any lawyer, they're looking for a loophole. And so then you have to add more laws, and then you have to clarify that law, and it never fixes anything. And so when you see all these laws being added in the Old Testament, it was not God's plan A. Plan A was always just listen to my voice and love me and know that I love you. But they kept finding loophole after loophole after loophole. So I love this example that actually Jeremy Myers gives in his book. Here's kind of the whole progression of what the law was. So it's going to be a conversation between God and the Jews. So God, I want relationship with all of you based on love, forgiveness, and reconciliation. The Jews, yeah, we'll take religion based on law and sacrifice with Moses as our mediator. God, really? That's not going to work, but okay, here are 10 commandments. Sweet. Wait, we can't keep these very well. The problem is that they are sort of vague, and the rivalry and violence keeps increasing. I know what our problem is. We need more laws, more sacrifices, and more religion to keep the peace. God, really? I don't think that's going to work, but okay. Here are more laws, if that is what you want, instead of relationship with me. The Jews, sweet. Now we know what to do, but we can't keep these very well. They don't answer all our questions or speak to every issue we encounter. And again, the rivalry and violence thing keeps getting worse. I know our problem. We need more laws, sacrifices, and religion. God, seriously? That's your conclusion from all of this? Okay, here are some more laws, if that is what you really want instead of relationship with me. Then Moses steps in. Hey, how's this whole religion thing going? If you keep it, it will be great. But when you don't do it, and I'm pretty sure we know you won't by now, then it will only result in more chaos, rivalry, and violence. So then God says, okay, back to plan A, and his name is Jesus. That's the progression of the law. And you see it even in our society today, and you even see it with Christians, that yes, we need laws. We absolutely need laws. But I can tell you politics and more laws aren't going to fix the human heart. It's not going to fix anything. It might curb it for a season, but it will never fix the human condition. I also want you to see again, and when I say this, and I know that this is hard for some, but just hear me out, that the law was never God's ultimate plan. Relationship was his plan. And so God patiently allows this to play out. Like, all right, you want more laws? All right, you want more religion? All right, you want this? But it wasn't his plan. People chose the law over relationship. Mankind, every culture chose religion over relationship. They chose sacrifice over relationship. And it never worked. It was never going to satisfy anything. And so Jesus comes along and he invades our space. He invades our culture. And he starts working from the inside out. Again, I don't want to be too harsh here, but as a pastor, I've seen this law-based religion dressed up as piety too many times now. It looks good, it sounds good, it looks righteous, but it never equals love. And I've seen this a lot with the way we do baptisms at Zootown Church. We're pretty loose when it comes to baptisms, meaning we just tell people about the love of God, we tell them what baptism is, and that's it. We don't do a class, we don't do anything. But I have literally seen people leave the church, divide the church, be upset at what we're doing over baptism. And what they're actually showing is they're going to in-place a rule over relationship. And they literally, like, unless a person fully says the right words or says the right things or believes whatever that they want them to believe, and they always say this one phrase. They always say, we're just trying to honor the word. The word is Jesus. And what honors Jesus is love and relationship. And so anytime a law or any type of thing gets in the way of relationship and causes division, then you are actually using the law to sin against relationship and sin against God. And so I've seen this in church over and over and over, that we'll take these ceremonies or we'll take these things and we think that that is honoring God. What honors God is a heart that wants to give their life to Christ in that moment. And so I can see that this law-based religion has even infected Christianity to the point of nausea. And it's not right. And it's not plan A of God. So where do they get this from in the Old Testament? Really was they just had a view of blessings and curses. It not only was them trying to keep sin out of their life, which they already had sin, but they had a view of God, because every culture had this view of God, that he was an angry deity and he needed to be appeased. And so they needed to follow the laws so that way they could be blessed. And again, there's no relationship in that. This is why I personally really struggle with the prosperity gospel in Christianity. I think they love Jesus. I think that they believe he's the Messiah. But this prosperity gospel view has basically made people give their money so they get something in return, so they get a blessing in return. And I'm not saying that's a wide brush and that everyone does that, but it's created this thing of blessings and curses. And Jesus comes along and says, that's not the thing. I send rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. But this Old Testament primitive view of God, it was like, we're going to do these laws and we're going to do these sacrifices so we get blessed from God. That's selfishly motivated. It's not actually a relationship with God, but it does help you understand why there was so many laws and why there was so many sacrifices, was so they could be blessed or cursed. But that's not love. So again, I say this often about a progressive revelation of who God is. Within the scriptures, you see that he's meeting people where they were at, and they're better understanding God, but they still have these cultural, hiccups before the full revelation is revealed. But when you see it in the Old Testament, you see that some of the writers started to see God clearer. They started to look back at their ancestors and they started to challenge some of those beliefs that their ancestors held about who God was. One of those was Isaiah. In Isaiah 1, he says this. He says, "What to me is the multitude of your sacrifices, says the Lord? I have had enough of burnt offerings of rams and the fat of well-fed beasts. I do not delight in the blood of bulls or of lambs or of goats. When you come to appear before me, who has required of you this trampling of my courts? Bring no more vain offerings, incense, and incense is an abomination to me. New moon and Sabbath and the calling of convocations, I cannot endure iniquity in solemn assembly." Amos goes on to say this, Amos 5, I despise your feasts, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. And the peace offerings of your fattened animals, I will not look upon them. Take away from me the noise of your songs. To the melody of your harps, I will not listen. But let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. You see, thousands of years later, again, I mean, they thought that God wanted these things. God needed these things. And again, God entered their culture and he allowed it. And I'm going to explain this more with sacrifices. But what you're seeing is thousands of years of progression to finally they're seeing that these sacrifices, these laws, they're fixing nothing. Nothing. They have 613 laws, a sacrificial system to the T. And God says, I'm tired of it because there is no love in it. One man writes this about the law, says, "The tragic truth about the Torah and the focus on the law throughout these five books is not for the purpose of calling people back to the law, but calling people back to love." That's what all these laws were meant to do, was to show you're supposed to love your neighbor. And they're doing this, but you're also doing this. And it was supposed to kind of humble people, but it didn't. It created this system where you could actually use the law to sin and feel good about it. So let's move to the New Testament as we kind of turn the corner here. So we're just going to look at Paul real quick. And Paul, by the way, was a master of the law. He called himself the Pharisees of Pharisees, that he followed the law perfectly. He knew the ins and outs of every single jot and tittle of the law. And he writes this in Romans 7. He says, "For sin, seizing an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me, and through it killed me. So the law is holy, and the commandment is holy and righteous and good. Did that which is good then bring death to me? By no means. It was sin producing death in me through what is good, in order that sin might be shown to be sin, and through the commandment might become sinful beyond measure." So basically what he's saying is this law was meant to expose sin. And so God allowed these to be added and added and added, but it wasn't because he's like, yes, you're breaking my law. It was because, no, look at how messed up you are. Look at how these laws aren't helping you whatsoever. So the law actually became a curse. And what Paul is saying here is the law actually did the opposite of what the Jews intended. Again, they were the ones who chose it. God said, how about relationship? They said, no. So he said, all right, here's the law. What it did is it actually exposed their own judgment and it led to more sin. How is that? Because it led to rivalry. I told you that the sin actually is rivalry, accusation, scapegoat, and sacred violence. And the law brought that in full force. You had rivalry with your fellow a Jew who was under the law. And then you could say, see, well, you broke this law. So then you felt better than them. And then you could accuse them. And then you could either stone them or take their eye out or whatever it is. And then you could actually kill them in the name of God. Because you said, well, this is God's law. So therefore, we can kill you in the name of God. And so Paul is saying here, the perfect one who followed the law is saying the law just brought out more sin. And you see this again in the Christian church today. And I hate to say this, but we're missing the love part of the law. So then we can now say, well, yeah, this is God's law. And so, I mean, you're in sin, then you feel better about your fellow Christian. It allows us to feel superior. When we live by a law-based mentality in the Christian church rather than the grace-based mentality we're supposed to, it allows us to feel morally superior. It then allows us to rank certain sins, even though we're like, yeah, I might be doing that, but it's not as bad as that. That's law-based religion. That's all it is. And then you can feel like you're a better Christian because you have better doctrine and you have better this and you have better that. And Jesus said, didn't you hear me tell you, get the log out of your own eye? You're looking at the speck in your brother's eye and you have this big fat log that you can't see through. Jesus told us that for a purpose. And so what we've done is we've kind of allowed the law to overtake the message of grace. Again, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I truly believe that the homosexual community has become the greatest scapegoats in the Christian church in our era. That and abortion. It's like what it allowed us to do is it allowed Christians to focus and make that somehow like the worst sin ever, and it allowed us to feel morally superior. But what it really did is allowed us to justify our own greed, our own anger, our own judgment. It allowed us to completely throw and scapegoat a whole group of people under the bus so we can feel better about ourselves. That is law-based religion, and we are sinning before God. Because then what it does is it keeps people away from grace. It keeps people away from relationship with God. Because we start with the law. This is, again, I'll say it, when you go up to certain areas and you see the law of the Ten Commandments posted everywhere, I think that is wrong. I think it's wrong because you are automatically taking away the relationship aspect and you're leading with the law, not with grace. It doesn't mean that sin doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt people. But what it means is we are putting a barrier in between people and receiving the relationship part of God. The Christian church has fallen into this. The Christian church tries to find every little detail about how to do baptism, how to do this, and how to do that. And then we hold people to this standard, and it's really our standard. And then we shun people and we break relationship if they don't meet the standard that we think we've set. The law leads to more sin because it breaks relationship. So let me finish this episode with Jesus, because Jesus is the final authority in all things. Again, I'll talk more about this through this whole episode, but there's so many times, and it's so obvious once you see it, that Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, but I say. That is one of the most important phrases we can ever read, because Jesus was clearing those things up. He was saying, you've heard about plan B, and you think it's plan A, but let me show you what plan A was all along. He was directly correcting Moses. He was correcting the Old Testament. And that's okay, because Jesus is the final revelation of who God is. And God met those people right where they were at, but Jesus came to take us to a higher plane of love and relationship. So we look at this scene where Jesus is talking to a Jewish audience. And remember, when you're reading some of these parables and you're reading some of these things that he says, that you have to know he was always speaking to this audience who was in front of him. And as I already told you, this Jewish audience believed that, especially the Pharisees, that sin wasn't something you had. They didn't view themselves as sinners because they said they'd been following this law. And they believed that sin was a disease. So they thought, if I've been following this law, that I have no sin because I haven't caught the disease. And so Jesus comes along and kind of shakes all this stuff up and says it's from the inside. And listen to how he calls out these Pharisees, this religious law-based mentality. Matthew 23, it says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law. Notice the weightier matters of the law. What's the spirit behind the law? Justice and mercy and faithfulness. That was the relationship part of the law that they kept missing. These you ought to have done without neglecting the others. You blind guides, straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. See, this is how the law lies to us. And this is where Christians lie to themselves sometimes. Because we too believe in a blessings and curses model. But what it does is it allows you to think that you're honoring God without actually honoring God, because what honors God is mercy and justice and relationship. And so the law, following these laws, actually allows you to put a barrier, as I already said, in between you and people, and then you feel you're morally superior to that person. And so these Pharisees were these amazing law-abiding people. And the Pharisees do get a bad rap because they did start out good, and they were just trying to bring the nation of Israel back to God. And back to morality. But it went so far, and they added so many more laws that basically that they were doing all these things that looked good, but they were keeping people away from God. They were the most judgmental people. They were the most harsh people, even though they were doing all these things. And Jesus gives a warning right here, not just to them, to all of us who have this Pharisee spirit. That's why Jesus said, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice." Notice he says, "I don't care about your sacrifices. I allowed you guys to do those because you think that God needs this sacrifice. But what God really wants is mercy." Basically, they used the law to break God's real law, which was love. This is why I believe at Zootown Church and many, many other churches, when grace is messy, grace scares people, grace looks like it's breaking the law, but it's not. It's actually leading people to the law. It's actually leading people to what was always meant behind the law, and that was love. Because the law changes nothing. And just like Jesus said, you guys are evangelizing. He's talking to the Pharisees. You will go evangelize the whole world, and you will make them more fit for Hades and hell because you've wrapped them up in this law system. And so often we can preach this grace and we can talk about this grace, but then as soon as someone breaks the law, we hold them to that. And we are keeping people away from the love of Jesus. We're keeping people away from the true meaning of the law, which was mercy and justice. I think sometimes, again, just like them, the Christian church today, we get so caught up in outward sins. And what we miss is when we scapegoat people then. I'm going to talk more about that in the week on scapegoat, but that we get so caught up in seeing one group of Christians doing this thing, and we can just say, yeah, see, they're the reason that Christianity is bad. Or we see in our society, well, see, yes, it's the homosexuals. That's why America is this way. Or it's the Democrats. That's why it's this way. And we can look so much on the outward, even though Jesus says God looks at the heart, and we judge people according to the law, that we just keep thousands, millions of people away from hearing the good news of Jesus Christ. On Jesus's most famous sermon, probably the Sermon on the Mount, he came to set the record straight of what really matters to God. And I find it so interesting that, myself included, that we will neglect Matthew 5 to go to eye for an eye, and we will literally switch Moses's teachings with Jesus's. But here is the real law of God. It says, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Can you imagine one of our politicians or our presidents coming out and saying this? They'd be like drug off the stage, because it's blessed are the powerful, blessed are the bomb throwers. Those are the blessed ones. And we can find that in the Old Testament. And Jesus says, no. "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Notice Jesus is giving this on a mountain. the same way Moses gave the Ten Commandments. That is not an accident. And what Jesus is doing here is he's saying, here is plan A all along. I've allowed thousands of years for this law thing to work out, and it's not gonna. It only created more sin. It only created more judgment. It only created more of a hierarchy. But he's saying, this is the real law. I want you to see that this, for two things, this is relationship-based. All of these are relationship-based. And two, there are no loopholes in these. Christians try to find them because we try to say, well, Moses said this, and that was, you know, that was God's law too. And Jesus said, no, this is it. This was always it. And this is how you become a son of God. I know there's a lot of questions with this, and Jesus knew that as well. Jesus knew that when he announced these new laws, which were always the laws, that people were going to have a ton of questions, because in their mindset, they were thinking like, well, yeah, but Moses said this, and we have to follow the law. And right now, I can even hear Christians thinking that. Yeah, but Jesus said that, but Moses said this. And may I say again, that's super off base when we start saying Moses is as equal to Jesus. But Jesus knows this is happening. And listen to how he interrupts this whole dialogue in Matthew 5, verse 17. He says, do not think that I have come to abolish the law. See, he knew that they were thinking that. Or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches other to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I can hear some of you even thinking, see, that proves that the law still applies. We just view it differently, and Christ helped us fulfill it. Or, I've heard many sermons on this, that the law was good, and it was good, but Paul said it was good to expose sin. So my question then is, if we say, well, the law still applies, and that's what Jesus meant here, again, which ones? Which ones are you going to follow? Are we going to start stoning homosexuals again? Are we going to implement slavery again? Are we going to do eye for an eye again? Which ones would you like to implement? That's not what Jesus was talking here. What he's doing is he is trying to show us that the heartbeat behind the law, the Ten Commandments, they only needed 10. And really, Jesus said you only needed 2. The heartbeat was always love, but the law, we turned the law into judgment. And Jesus says, I fulfill all of the law and the commandments. Why? Because Jesus was perfect in his love. So that's what he's saying. I fulfilled it because I showed you it was meant for love. And so when he says anyone who relaxes any of these teachings, what he's really saying is anyone who doesn't have love with these is way off base. Anyone who follows the law, anyone who causes division with the law, anyone who keeps one of these children away from grace with the law, you will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Notice he never says, ever in the scriptures, that those who show too much grace, or those who err on the side of love, or those who err on the side of grace will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. He never once says that, but he says, you who use the law to hurt people and squash people and not use it for love will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. He then says, you have to be greater than the Pharisees. Why does he say that? Well, he already said it before this, that they viewed the law as a way that they could actually stand in judgment, and they viewed the law as a way that kept them better than everyone else, and they were actually sinning by using the law in that way. And so what Jesus is saying is, the only way you can be better than the Pharisees is if you switch the law with love leading it. So again, here's just kind of my warning to myself and anyone else watching this when we talk about the law and we say, yeah, this is God's law. in an effort to stay pure before God, are you actually thinking you're better than everybody else? Are you actually judging your neighbor instead of loving your neighbor? Have you used the law to justify sinful behavior in the name of God? Has it caused rivalry in your life where you can say, yeah, see, they might be doing that, but at least I'm not doing that? That leads to accusation when then you start accusing people according to the law, which then you blame them, which then you scapegoat them because you feel justified that you're morally superior to them. And finally, you use sacred violence, either with your tongue or with your actual fists, where you can try to destroy someone's life or you can try to put someone down in the name of God by using his law. In an effort to follow God, are we actually pushing more people away because we don't understand what the law's purpose was for all the time? The people wanted law, not relationship. And next week, we're going to see people wanted sacrifice, not relationship. And God entered the human story to take them to what was always meant to be love of God and love of neighbor, which was the law always supposed to be pointing to. So let me just end with this statement that I wrote, just personally. The reason this is so important is I have seen in myself that if I don't want to practice the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount, because they are really hard to follow, then I will always have a backup plan with Moses' law. I have every right to follow eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth because Moses told me that is God's standard. Yet I can no longer consciously say that the kingdom way in which Jesus spoke of has any root in the law. I want to be called a son of heaven someday, and I know that will cost me. Everything in my soul wants to follow the law, so I have some metric to gauge my success in following God. But the more I know Jesus, the more I know he is calling me to the law of love. The law was always plan B, but I serve Jesus, not Moses. And he says, stick to plan A, the Beatitudes. May we be a church and a people that sticks to plan A, relationship with God and relationship with people. See you next time.